In this ShowMeCon sponsored episode of the Exploring Information Security Podcast, Jeff Mann joins me to discuss PCI 4.0 changes.
Computers now have primary control of critical functions.
Houston, recommend a vector transfer.
Your go for APU shutdown on time.
Roger, go for deploy.
Nice to be in orbit.
Welcome to the Exploring Information Security Podcast, where you learn, explore, and grow your security mindset. I'm your host, Timothy D. Block, and in this episode, we'll be exploring PCI 4.0 changes with Jeff Mann. Show notes can be found at exploresec.com/EIS. You can support the podcast by donating. There's a donate button on exploresec.com and on the podcast page. You can sign up for the newsletter. You can also buy tickets to ShowMeCon. It's a really great conference. I'll be there. Jeff Mann will be there. You should be there. Feedback for the show, timothy.dblock@exploresec.com. You can reach out on LinkedIn. You can rate the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. If it's not on your favorite podcast platform, let me know and I will submit there. So this is a really great one. I've seen Jeff talk before at several other conferences. He's a great speaker. He is on the Security Weekly podcast. So he actually joined me from the studio over there, even though this is audio. But he joined me to discuss, and really we kind of got into PCI 4.0 changes, which was interesting. But he talked about his kind of journey through the security field doing PCI, and then we get into some of, you know, the changes for PCI, which I think, hence the title of the talk, would be really great for people that are having to, you know, adhere to PCI and looking forward to the changes. So with that, yeah, let's get into it.
I'm doing pretty well, getting into the busy season. Day job work is picking up, and it's conference season, so I'm going to be out and about a lot the next 2 months or so.
Yeah, and ShowMeCon's one of those?
And ShowMeCon is one of them, yep.
Have you haven't been to ShowMeCon before, have you?
No, I'd never been to ShowMeCon before, you know, pre-COVID. It was on the bucket list. I'd heard about it. You know, of course, I've done a lot of other conferences sort of in the Midwest. And a couple months ago, I saw the notice come out that ShowMeCon was coming back. And I noticed I was already connected on LinkedIn with the organizer. So I was like, hey, let me know if you ever want a world-class speaker. And he came back and said, you want a keynote? I'm like, are you serious? He's like, yeah. I said, okay. So here we are.
That's cool. What are you going to be speaking about at your keynote?
So I got some really good advice a couple years ago when I first started, you know, going out on the speaking circuit, which is when I was working at Tenable, and they had me being one of their evangelists. I ran into Jason Street somewhere along the line. And I asked him about, you know, how do you put together talks? Because he's, you know, he's everywhere. He's like, oh, I do one talk a year. I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. So my day job is as what's known as a QSA, a qualified security assessor, payment card industry. And with much anticipation, version 4 of the PCI data security standard is about to become the law of the land April 1st. And when I first started looking at doing some conference speaking, one of the conferences that I like to go to is the first weekend of April. And I'm like, oh, I should give a talk on PCI. And I asked them about it, and they're like, oh, yeah, you can do that. And then I thought, yeah, they always had me on the main stage, this particular conference. Nobody wants to hear about PCI from the main stage. But what I wanted to talk about was, because I've been doing PCI for 20 years. It's been around for 20 years, which is disturbing in a lot of ways, that's half of my career now. But mm-hmm. I wanted to give a talk that tied in PCI, but wasn't just about PCI. So at a high level, the talk is about sort of my journey, my career, and how I ended up getting into PCI. I framed it around a couple years ago. I gave a talk on the first couple years of my experience working at the National Security Agency. And it was when I was at Tenable and I had access to marketing. So I had the marketing department come up with sort of a promotional graphic, and I called the talk Tales from the Crypt ... analyst. So I had him come up with like a mock comic book. You know, so those of us that are old might remember Tales of HBO. Yep, but before it was an HBO show, it was actually a comic book, and I was into comic books when I was a kid. So I had him do it was funny because the marketing people, they Googled it and they came up with the Crypt Keeper and his eyeballs. And I'm like, you know, go scroll down a page. And so they went to the second page of Google results, and that's when the comic book started popping up. So the first couple of years of my career at NSA, I called Tales from the Crypt Analyst. And then I did a sequel, which talked about the latter part of my career at NSA, which I called More Tales from the Crypt Analyst. And that's the story of how I got involved in computer and network hacking, sort of at the very beginning of what we used to call internet security. And so this talk was really, leaving NSA, which I left at the end of 1996, to up to the beginning of 2004, where I ventured out into the private sector and, was working, doing pen testing initially, a lot of vulnerability assessments and a lot of security architecture, and basically talking to companies out in the private sector, trying to convince them that they needed to start thinking about information security if they were going to plug into this internet, this new thing. And my frustrations over the years of not getting companies to pay attention and listen and focus on security kind of culminated in going to work for a company in towards the end of 2004, which was when the PCI data security standard first came out. And I was handed a copy and I was told, here, read this and do this. This is what we're going to do. What I initially liked about PCI was it gave me an audience with clients, and they had to listen because they didn't understand security. They didn't care about security, but they knew they had to do this PCI compliance thing if they were going to continue to be able to use credit cards to engage in commerce. So it was sort of came at the right time where I was getting frustrated with, I've gotten root how many, years in a row, usually the same way, exploiting the same vulnerabilities, exploiting the same weaknesses and practices and procedures. And then, PCI came along, and now I was having conversations with companies. Okay, this, you have to do it, so you might as well listen. Here's what it's all about. Here are the different component parts. This is why it's important. This is why it matters. This is how it all works, and why PCI in this instance is asking you to do these things that you don't really understand and don't necessarily care about. So the essence of my talk is, my journey storytelling from leaving NSA to the first couple years of really at the very beginning of this thing that we now call cybersecurity. But back then we called it internet security, and then we called it network security. And then we reverted back to information security because that's really what it was about back then, was protecting the things that companies cared about, which is typically information, data. In fact, we call it data security sometimes. So it's a little bit, for older folks, it's a little bit of a stroll down memory lane. For younger folks, it's hopefully enlightening to find out that some of the things that are being talked about these days is, amazing and new concepts are actually really old concepts that we've been trying to convince organizations and companies to do as long as this stuff has been around. So I'm doing this one talk, throughout the year. The keynote version of it is hopefully going to emphasize more of the look what we were saying 30 years ago, and let that resonate with you when you're, thinking that we've advanced and everything is new and different and modern. But it's not really. We're still struggling with the same problems that we were struggling with at the very beginning, and still dealing with companies and organizations don't really want to do security. They don't really understand it. They just want to spend as little as possible and do as little as possible so that they can be considered to be okay. And hopefully that's an object lesson or a history lesson and helps people to, I'm not out to change people's minds, but I hopefully will make them think differently and think, frankly, and look to the past and look to the history and look to where we've come from and how far we have yet to go in terms of sort of moving the needle in terms of organizations getting to this mythical place of security, which, you know, some want to do, others, you know, they do what they have to do. Others, you know, would rather it all go away, frankly. So this will, ShowMeCon will be essentially the first time I'm doing it as a keynote, at least as an opening keynote. I'm hopeful that the audience, the attendees will listen and pay attention, ask questions, push back. And we certainly haven't solved any of the problems, in my opinion. In fact, I think we've created more problems with all the newfangled technology that's out there these days that everybody loves to run to and think that it's going to solve their problems. I was at a gathering just yesterday with some like-minded people, and one of them was telling a story about a government client that they were talking about the need for cloud security, and like, well, we don't have to worry about that because somebody else does that for us, and we don't have to worry about the cost of cloud computing because it's free. At least for them, it was free because somebody else is paying for it. But yeah, you know, everybody was like, what? There's people out there that think that the cloud is free. But certainly the allure of cloud, at least when it first started becoming a thing, which is, you know, 10, 12 years ago, was, oh, it'll be a lot cheaper. It'll be a lot cheaper. That's what everybody was sold on. But, you know, we're slowly figuring out that from a security and compliance perspective, a lot of the responsibility doesn't go away. Some things are taken care of for companies, but especially in the early days, if you read the small print of the contracts with the cloud providers, who, you know, they're few and far between, so you can fill in the blank, you know, read the small print and it's like, oh, we're not really doing anything more than providing rack space and lights and power, but everything else is still up to you. Not just from a security perspective, but from an administrative perspective, from a development perspective. You know, things are changing. A lot of things are happening differently now, but, you know, more and more, you know, I do a podcast, Paul Security Weekly. We do a news segment, and, you know, we're always talking about companies that are getting hacked even in their cloud environments. And what? You have to secure a cloud environment? It's not automatically secure just because we dropped into somebody's space? Who'd have thunk it? So that's maybe more longer of an answer that you wanted, but that's kind of where I'm going with the, you know, with the theme of my talk. It's the theme of all my talks, really, is as much as you think everything is modern and different and advanced, it really isn't. Not at a fundamental, what are we trying to accomplish in terms of security? What are the goals of security? Those certainly haven't changed, and how you achieve those goals certainly has changed because the technology has changed and the platforms have changed and the environments have changed. But you know, spoiler alert, technology is never going to solve this problem because what is always the weakest link? It's the people and the processes. And I happen to fall down on, I think ultimately it's process, it's procedure. That's what bites everybody that finds out that they've been majorly breached and compromised and had all their data stolen, and you start digging for the root causes, and lo and behold, it's because somebody didn't follow a process or there wasn't really a good process there to begin with, because everybody was thinking, well, we just have to drop in fill in the blank technology and we're done, right? We don't have to think about it, set it and forget it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, you said a lot there. I just really can identify. And I love that you said people and processes, because I think what you're getting at too is people are looking for that silver bullet or that easy button from a technology standpoint. And it's like, this is where the term shelfware comes from, right?
Yep.
It's they buy it and then it's never used because no one has time to actually get in there and actually configure it, or it doesn't do everything that they need it to do.
Gosh, you just reminded me of a story from this time period. I hadn't thought to put it into my talk. Maybe I'll remember to do it at ShowMeCon. But I had a client one time where we visited their data center. And back in those days, everybody had their own data center. And they had bought and there weren't a lot of products back then, frankly. There was firewalls, and maybe there was a couple scanners, and then people started coming up with intrusion detection, which was very often an appliance. So you had to buy the server as well as the software. So this company that I was working for, they had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on several IDS servers, IDS systems, and they were literally not only still in the box, but the box was being used to prop open the data center door, which had locks on it, by the way, because they were having, you know, ventilation, air control problems. So I'll have to try to work that in somewhere. But I was like, well, that's the epitome of you're not only not using it, but you're using it to create a whole different vulnerability. Classic.
Well, it is being a doorstop, so I guess it's not actually on the shelf. It's the doorstopware.
They were getting some use out of it, but it certainly wasn't the intended use. But you know, that's what people like.
And not even in the secure way either, right? Mm-hmm. So, what are you seeing with PCI 4.0 that people need to be concerned with?
Well, PCI 4.0 is a pretty major overhaul as the standard goes. It still has the same overall structure in terms of their six overarching goals that has never changed. 12 major requirements that I usually try to explain it to people that, you know, they look at me like I've got, you know, snot hanging out my nose when I mention PCI. But, you know, the six goals are basically secure your network. Second goal is secure all the stuff that goes into your network. The third requirement is to secure the data that you're trying to protect wherever it is, whether it's in transit or at rest. The fourth element is sort of control access to that data by controlling, who can gain access physically and logically. There's another requirement that is to keep everything up to date and secure. So, you know, that's where things like patching and configuration management comes in. Do all the security things, all the scanning and testing and monitoring and detections. And then finally wrap it all around a written security policy that has executable, operational, and repeatable processes and procedures associated with it. So that's it in a nutshell. What changes in version 4 is they've changed a lot of the language that companies over the years had started pointing to and saying, well, the requirement says, as an example, secure our routers and our firewalls. Well, we don't have those anymore. We do everything in the cloud, and it's all software based and it's all serverless. So we don't have to do any of this stuff, right?
No.
So they've come up with new terminology to sort of close the loopholes or try to eliminate the people trying to argue themselves out of having to do something. Another good example is the concept of shared hosting provider. Back in the beginning, when everybody had their own servers and their own hardware, and then there was companies that started hosting primarily e-commerce systems, there was the concept that, you know, you could be a shared hosting provider and be a web hosting provider and have a whole bunch of different companies being served off of a single hardware server. And so thus the term shared hosting provider. But that was the definition. And for years, people have pointed to that and said, well, that's not what we do. We're using virtualization. So it's different. It's not on a single server or in a cloud environment. Well, it's not even servers at all. It's not even hardware. So all these rules don't apply. So they've changed the language in terms of that respect to try to sort of bring it up to the 21st century to make the requirements relevant to everybody and applicable to everybody. You can't argue terminology and definitions out of it. So that's one major change that's happened. I think the other major change, sort of in line with, you know, the acknowledgement that most everybody's doing stuff in the cloud these days in one way, shape, or form. So they've tried to reorient a lot of the language in general, not necessarily specific definitions, but try to make sure that the requirements are encompassing sort of modern architectures and the modern way we do things. There's a lot of minor changes that nobody's going to notice until they have to go through an assessment. And it's really going to, there's really from a QSA perspective, I'm often called an auditor. There's going to be a lot more work for us to do in terms of documenting what we're seeing and how we're seeing and presenting the evidence to prove that they're doing things. So not major changes in terms of the objectives of the security requirements, but certainly trying to update it to make sure that people understand that it's applicable, yes, to you, regardless of how you're doing it. There's other interesting minor changes, but, you know, if you don't have to go through it, I don't want to bore anybody with the details. If you do have to go through it, be forewarned. There are changes coming that could impact you, especially the ability to, I guess, I would characterize another major theme is, and frankly, the PCI Council has been trying to emphasize this since version 2 was released back in 2010, but the concept that all this stuff is stuff that you're supposed to be doing on an ongoing basis, continuous basis. Don't scan once a quarter. Scan on a continuous basis and make sure that once a quarter you can say that you're getting clean results, type of thing. But there's lots of requirements that are have time periods associated with them, whether it's something that you do daily, something you do weekly, quarterly, monthly, and so on and so forth. A lot of companies to this day, PCI is coming up next month. Let's start pulling together the evidence. Oh, we haven't been doing this stuff that we're supposed to be doing every day. Quick, we need to make it look like we've been doing it for the whole year, type of thing. Reviewing policies and procedures, the documentation, that's supposed to be an annual event. And I can't tell you how many clients I've been to where, you know, their stack of documentation had all gone through review on the same day, and it was the Thursday before the Monday that I showed up on site to do the review, type of thing. So, you know, there is efforts to try to emphasize in hopefully new and creative ways to clients that have to follow the standard. You know, this is really stuff you're supposed to be doing on a continuous, ongoing basis.
One of the things, I mean, it kind of goes back to what you were talking about earlier, is people aren't doing the basics, and then you have compliance, right? I work in healthcare space, so it's similar in that regard where they have certain things. And I imagine it's a little frustrating because it's a little frustrating that people are just still even trying to meet the minimum requirement, right? And, sure. And not doing like the continuous stuff, especially like that's, yes, you want to do it every quarter, but if you can do it monthly, you really should be doing it monthly.
Right. Well, yeah. There's definitely language about doing things continuously. There's a frustration that, and frankly, the council attempted to put things into version 4 that they actually had to back out some of it because of the pushback they got. I mean, you know, like everything else, there's politics involved and there's some you know, very powerful, influential organizations that have the ability to lobby the council successfully. But one of the things that they tried to change was they wanted to come up with a new category that I think was specifically to call out companies that routinely didn't do the things that they were supposed to do. But you know, when you go in and do an assessment, there's 400 some odd controls. We go in and we go through it and see how well they're meeting it. And then inevitably there's gaps. And then you go through a month or two of waiting for them to get things in order and get the ducks aligned. But by the end of the day, you get your report with all the boxes checked. Everything's in place. They wanted to, in version 4, come up with a new category that said in place with remediation, meaning you sucked the first time we looked at you, and we're going to call you out for not having done the thing. So it's something different. You're in place, you're compliant, but they were highlighting the fact that you'd screwed up somewhere along the way. That went away. They had too much pressure, probably from lawyers, frankly. And we had some concerns mm-hmm. with the practice that I work for, because a lot of our clients are service providers that can contractually say that they're meeting PCI all the time in their contracts with their clients. And they're like, well, how can we say that and then have a report that's produced that has evidence that's saying we're not doing that? So that went away. But it was a nice try. Another change that they made, which I think is also trying to address the fact that, you know, square peg, round hole, they've had a concept for a long time that if you didn't exactly meet the requirement the way it was written, but you're meeting the spirit of the requirement, you can do that but write up a compensating control, which is an annual event. You have to prove it all over again the next time that the compensating control is legitimate and does meet the objective. They've come up with a new way of doing things where they just have like an alternative approach. You know, if you're not meeting a requirement because you're not using the technology that was sort of implied, but the council will never say you have to use a specific technology, and you're just doing it differently, and it's not a temporary thing, it's just a different way that you're meeting the requirement, they have the option now of using an alternate approach, and you simply have to document that the alternate approach is there. You have to come up, you as the entity that's being assessed has to come up with sort of, okay, what are the checks just to make sure that we're doing the right things given that we're doing a different approach. And so it's kind of a different type of process, and there's a lot of legwork initially, but essentially you do away with the compensating control. You come up with, we're doing it differently, and here's the testing criteria for the different way you do it. And then I, as a QSA, come in and follow their alternative approach and their alternative testing. I don't know how many companies are going to actually go that route, but it does allow for creative thinking and creative approaches mm-hmm. to security. And I've certainly had many conversations / arguments with a lot of folks over the years of, yeah, but the technology exists to do things differently this way. We don't have to do it that way. And I've always said, yeah, that's fine. Now the council is saying, yeah, that's fine. Come up with a way to demonstrate it that's testable, that's accessible, and run with it. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. I think we're at the end of our time, Jeff. So I appreciate you hopping on, joining me to discuss about what you're going to talk about at ShowMeCon and actually get into PCI a little bit. It's a very, I know, like you said, a lot of people might be bored, but I'm interested in some of that stuff. So,
well, I'll say this about PCI, sort of as a parting thought. You know, there's a lot of talk in the industry about all the different things that we have to worry about, things like critical infrastructure. I like to use that as a good example where I've had clients over the years that are water utilities, electric companies, gas stations, power companies. They're doing PCI somewhere because people are paying for the utilities with a credit card. It's a well-established standard. I would also dare to say you could consider it a framework. All these, you know, critical infrastructure companies out there that everybody's saying, oh, they need help, they need legislation, they need government oversight, you know, because they tend to be ignored companies from certain other regulatory perspectives, at least from a data security perspective. My contention is, why somebody in your organization is doing PCI, why don't you look to that? You don't need to go look at, you know, NIST this or CIS that or MITRE ATT&CK framework. PCI is out there. It's kind of well established. It's been tested and vetted. Somebody in your organization's doing it. You might have the answer to how you secure all your other things right there at your fingertips. Now you have to be smart enough to, you know, apply the principles to some other type of data set, but that shouldn't be that hard to do. It's freely available. There's lots of information and resources that help you address it. So, you know, food for thought. If you work for an organization that, you know, needs to do security and you're struggling with, well, how do we do it well and how do we do it right? There is this well-established framework out there called PCI. If you can get over the, you know, the stigma that has been very often associated with it, you know, most people, if you pin them down, they're like, yeah, it's actually a pretty decent standard. It actually covers mm-hmm. just about everything that you should be thinking about in terms of securing your organization and securing the things that you care about. So I'll leave it at that.
Awesome. Yeah, no, love it. I love that. I love that idea. All right, Jeff, thank you. And I'm looking forward to seeing you at ShowmeCon, man.
And I'm looking forward to checking it all out and experiencing it. And let's have some fun.
And that will do it. Hopefully you learned something. If you didn't, email me at timothy.dblock@explorersec.com or reach out to me on LinkedIn and let me know what you didn't learn, and we'll cover it in a future podcast. Show notes can be found at explorersec.com/EIS. If you enjoyed the show, share it with others and rate it on iTunes or on your favorite podcast platform. You can fill out the contact form at explorersec.com/contact. Please sign up for the newsletter, subscribe to the RSS feed to stay up to date with the latest new content on explorersec.com. We will see you next time, Security Explorers.